Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And Jim, Cory Booker's at least got a little company now. That's our good martini today after, as Jim said yesterday, his conscience held hostage after being very honest on Meet the Press on Sunday and defending Bain in particular and private equity in general. That was unacceptable to David Axelrod and the Obama campaign, who said Cory Booker's flat out wrong. Well, there's some other Democrats who are basically saying the same thing Cory Booker said, including former Democratic National Committee Chairman and former Pennsylvania Governor Ed Rendell, as well as Mark Warner, the Democratic Virginia Senator and former governor who made his fortune largely through private equity as well. Good for them for standing up when they saw Booker basically get beat over the head by the Obama campaign for daring to speak what he thought was actually true, even though the president admitted yesterday that demonizing Romney through Bain is basically his path to reelection this year. You've got some Democrats out there who at least are willing to be honest and sticking up for Bain.
Yes, I just want to give listeners a quick update. In a blatant violation of the Geneva Conventions, Booker's conscience was paraded around in a propaganda video on the Rachel Maddow program last night. The rules of war strictly violate that once you capture someone's conscience, you cannot use it in propaganda videos like this. So we're dealing with ferocious animals, Greg, and we should never forget that in dealing with the blatant lawbreaking of the Obama campaign. We have kind of observed how often Barack Obama will talk about Wall Street investors, private equity, and all these things as if they're the scourge of America, as if the little man from a Monopoly game is out, you know, stealing people's jobs and sitting in Scrooge McDuck's money bin, counting all of his gold. And at the same time, he'll often do this on the way to a big high-dollar Wall Street fundraiser. And we'll point out that this is a fairly blatant contradiction. And, you know, one of the things that is just a common fact of life is that both parties over the last, let's say, 20 years have gotten very, very comfortable with extremely wealthy donors. And as a result of courting them and playing footsie with them and giving them special photo ops with the president, special access to the president. We all remember the overnights in the Lincoln bedroom during the Clinton years. So the idea that either one of these parties would say that they're not tainted by big money from Wall Street is pretty laughable. And so you're starting to see Democrats who have long since gotten past any class warfare demonization of the investor class, the Mark Warners of the world. And you can put, you know, Cory Booker, Harold Ford Jr., Steve Ratner, Obama's former car czar. These are their friends and neighbors, and they don't think of them as being bad people. And I think what's very clear in the Obama world is that just as in the ancient church, you could purchase indulgences and basically get away with your sins as long as you donate enough money, in the world of Obama, you're a bad capitalist who is, you know, stealing and pillaging the middle class until you donate a lot of money to him. Then all of a sudden, somehow, you're not part of the problem anymore. Bain Capital employees donated oodles of money to Democrats in the 2008 cycle, including, I believe, two-thirds of their donations went to the Democratic National Committee. They weren't an issue back then. Now, all of a sudden, it's really important. The Obama campaign wants everyone to know what terrible people Bain Capital is, except for the guy who followed Romney, who's now a bundler for the Obama campaign. So a giant blatant bundle of contradictions here. And basically what it amounts to is Obama kind of insisting people who give money to me are good. People who are not giving money to me and oppose my agenda are bad. The fact that more and more Democrats are getting uncomfortable with this line of criticism indicates a certain flailing desperation on the part of the Obama campaign.
Romney has known for a long time, if he didn't know it, he certainly found out from Newt Gingrich and Rick Perry and others in the primaries, that Bain was going to be a major focal point for his opponents. But Karl Rove, who is pretty much been clear without directly saying so that from the get-go that he's behind Mitt Romney in this thing. American Crossroads is out with a new ad, which doesn't mention Romney at all, talking about the president's record on a number of key issues, and he does it in kind of a soft-peddling way, which is very, very effective, I think. Here's an extended excerpt of this ad.
I always loved watching the kids play basketball. I still do, even though things have changed. It's funny, they can't find jobs to get their career started. And I can't afford to retire. And now we're all living together again. I supported President Obama because he spoke so beautifully. He promised change, but things changed for the worse. Obama started spending like our credit cards have no limit. His health care law made health insurance even more expensive. We've had stimulus and bailouts. Obama added almost $16,000 in debt for every American. How will my kids pay that off when they can't even find jobs?
And Jim, the general theory from Rove, and the polls bear this out, is that people can't stand Obama's policies, but they still think relatively highly of him personally. And so the strategy here is to rip the policies without mocking the guy to pieces.
You can basically hear the focus group in this ad. This is a composite woman. This is not one particular woman who, you know, represents the disappointment in the president. I would note, you have to see the video of this, but of all the problems during Obama's presidency, Greg, I think the rapid aging we've all experienced with computer-generated effects is really one of the most troubling things. No. Look, you can see the theme of young people unable to start their careers and unable to find entry-level jobs, people having difficulty retiring, the running up of the debt, just a general sense of economic despair in this. And there's this, you know, I love the line about he talks so beautifully, almost a little condescending. You know, almost a little, oh, he's such pretty words, but no results. And that's kind of the heart of the message against this. And, you know, having spoke to some of the guys at Crossroads, this is indicative of what they found in focus groups. They looked, they went around and found people who had voted for Obama in 2008, weren't sure who they were voting for in 2012. And there is this tone of disappointment. And they're not Obama haters. And, and there are a lot of really aggressive, furious arguments that folks on the right can make. And generally, these folks are kind of immune to that. They don't find them all that persuasive. But a tone of more in sorrow than in anger. Oh, Obama had so much potential, and for some reason, he just hasn't lived up to the hype. He talks a good game, but he doesn't deliver, and none of his things ever seem to work out. This is the theme that I think can really work, and this is going to be running in about 10 swing states. It's about a $10 million purchase, and you will see probably quite a bit of it in the coming weeks. And I think you'll see this theme throughout basically a whole lot of ads between now and November.
And you're welcome, folks, for your double first martini today. We thought.
Yeah, some days we just have a lot of good martinis.
Yeah, well, today's one of them. So on to martini number two now. And Jim, as you well know from covering campaigns, sometimes your campaign does a great job of staying on message, and sometimes you have surrogates that do things that you can do nothing about other than try to ignore them and eventually control the damage if you have to. Arizona Secretary of State Ken Bennett was elected in 2010, and he made a number of promises. One of them was that as the lead state elections official, he would not be endorsing any candidates. Well, he's decided that's no longer his position. In fact, he's the co-chair of the Romney campaign in Arizona. And he decided that since people could go back and look at previous endorsements, that if it really made no difference if he made endorsements while in office. And this, of course, is all happening at the same time that he's decided to very publicly challenge Hawaii's official records as to whether the president really was born there and whether he's then eligible to be on the ballot. So if you are looking for a quiet, hopefully relatively comfortable win for Romney in Arizona, it may still happen on the win part, the quiet part, at least not right now.
Two thoughts here. I remember during the Florida recount, people getting really upset about Catherine Harris. And we should all acknowledge one fairly basic fact of life. You're not going to find people who are interested in taking positions like Secretary of State and administering elections who do not have an interest in politics themselves. That you don't find people who have absolutely no preference between the two parties who would want to be involved in the process of running elections. So ideally, in a perfect world, these people would be perfectly objective and we would know nothing about their politics and all that. But that's just not going to happen. Having said that, I think it's a bad idea for people who are administering elections to endorse candidates within those elections. And the fact that he early in the week kind of dabbled in birtherism and said he wanted verification of Obama's birthplace, this is not helpful to anyone on the right with the recent publicist's little brochure that mentioned Obama being born in Kenya. There's a little bit of, you know, a new kerfuffle in this. It's worth noting that the guys at Breitbart who had written about that are emphatic that they are not birthers. They just think it's very curious that at some point earlier in his career, Obama was pitched as a Kenyan immigrant. You can easily imagine this being just some mistake in a discussion of an interview in which people mixing up Obama Sr., Obama Jr. But there's also just something kind of strange and curious about this. But having said that, I don't want to see the Secretary of State in a fairly key state suddenly dabbling in birtherism. I think it's bad for conservatism, bad for Republicans, and just bad for the effort to unseat Obama in 2012.
On to martini number three now, Jim. And just a couple of weeks ago, we were mocking the Washington Post for going back nearly 50 years to discuss a prank that Mitt Romney may or may not have been involved with in cutting the hair of a fellow private school student that he deemed was too long. Mitt Romney doesn't remember it, but that's not far back enough for the Post. Now, from the May 20th edition of the Post, we get this. Here's the first couple paragraphs from a story that says, on the wildflower-studded slopes of the Ozarks, where memories run long and family ties run thick, a little-known and long-ago chapter of history still simmers. On September 11, 1857, a wagon train from this part of Arkansas met with a gruesome fate in Utah, where most of the travelers were slaughtered by a Mormon militia in an episode known as the Mountain Meadows Massacre. Hundreds of the victims' descendants still populate these hills and commemorate the killings, which they have come to call the first 9/11. Jim, I'm not here to defend either side in the massacre of 1857. I don't know what happened. I'm sure there were some Geneva Convention violations there as well. But let's just say I'm pretty sure Mitt Romney's not to blame for anything that happened that day.
If we really want to get this into who had the nuttier ancestors game, we can play that. We don't have to go that far for some nutty ancestors of Barack Obama Jr. This was a rather appalling piece. It's worth noting it ran on page A6. This was not back page filler for the Washington Post. They sent a reporter down to Arkansas. This was not some freelance piece. This is, you know, their actual effort. And I think what was really important to them was to get the words Romney's faith and massacre in the headline, right, and then hope that nobody reads that far, you know, down below. Although I think getting the first 9/11 in there was really worthwhile for the Washington Post, you know, to make sure people associate 9/11 and Mitt Romney over and over again. You kind of knew this was going to happen, that there would be a sudden obsession with every unpleasant chapter in Mormon history. The idea that something that happened in the 1850s should affect what we think of Mitt Romney today is pretty appalling. Not the sins of the fathers visited upon the sons, but the sins of the great-great-great-great-great-grandfathers co-religionists. It's not even like there are other Romneys who were involved in these sorts of things, you know? So somebody had said between this and the bullying story, the Washington Post is now going to be all out for Barack Obama in 2012, and that's rather disappointing because the Post used to be not as bad as, say, the New York Times in national campaigns, but they would get awful in Virginia campaigns. And they were on a metaphorical jihad against George Allen back in 2006. I believe they mentioned Makaka in something like 100 articles in a three-month span. And then they went the same thing about, you know, Bob McDonnell and his thesis, repeated one, you know, front-page exposure day after day after day. Well, now the same kind of frothing-at-the-mouth partisanship that was starting to affect the local coverage of the Washington Post really has gone whole hog into their national coverage. It's disappointing because the Post used to be, I mean, even if it was not, you know, precisely the kind of newspaper I'd want to read, it was always a good enough newspaper. And it's now steadily declining with, you know, inane propaganda style pieces like that one.
No, that's absolutely true. And it's been mentioned a few times. I'm betting that if they're willing to spend this much attention on something that happened over 150 years ago, the late integration of the Mormon Church in the 1970s is going to be an issue late in this campaign. Mark my words, because they're going to say Mitt Romney was an adult and didn't lead the charge to make it happen faster. Whatever. Jim, we'll leave it there. Have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
I can say it no better than that, Greg. Whatever. See you tomorrow.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us again on Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.